And it's really big business. Australians are getting fatter as the pharmaceutical companies and the weight loss clinics make fortunes on us trying to lose weight. Meantime, in our schools, teenage girls are smoking to control their weight. Some 8% say they do that, and trying to outdo themselves on eating the least amount at lunchtime. Lydia Jade Turner is the Managing Director of Body Matters in Australia and has written a fascinating piece for The Drum, which starts with the news that it's Healthy Weight Week.
It's interesting. You know, the Dietitians Association of Australia has launched Healthy Weight Week this week, and, you know, it says that 61% of Australian adults and 25% of Australian children are either overweight or obese, so it sounds like a really great idea. But actually, there are a growing number of health professionals who are actively opposed to this initiative. You know, I think it's important to start off by recognizing that currently 95% of obesity research is actually funded by private industry, which includes these massive pharmaceutical giants. So obesity research is currently very much riddled with conflicts of interest. I mean, just recently, Allergan, which is an international pharmaceutical giant, funded studies showing that lap banding interventions were appropriate for 14-year-olds. And, you know, they've now sponsored clinical trials in the U.S., which will open the global market, teenage market, for profit. Now they're actually pushing to have obesity recognized as a disease, which will force insurance companies to pay for treatment. So there's a lot of corporate interest involved. And one thing I do like to talk about is how even if you attend obesity conferences here in Australia, just last year at the International Obesity Summit, professor after professor stood up and declared conflicts of interest prior to presenting their research as if somehow, acknowledging these conflicts of interest should make us feel as though we can trust, you know, their findings.
And it's interesting you say that these companies really aren't having the successes. If Viagra had the same sort of response that lots of these diet tablets have, in that it's not making people thinner, they wouldn't be on the market.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Most Australians today have never been told that currently we don't have a solution for weight loss in the long term. Anyone can lose weight in the short term, but when we look at the research for weight loss after 2 to 5 years, we find that there is a 98% failure rate. So what I'm trying to get people to think of is what happens after the after photo. We don't have solutions that work, and as you were just saying, you know, if Viagra had a 98% failure rate, we wouldn't prescribe it. You wouldn't be allowed to. So it's interesting to me that there's this huge discrepancy between what obesity experts are happy to concede, at their conferences and amongst themselves, their colleagues, but this huge discrepancy between that and what they're telling the public, because, you know, often obesity experts, you know, love to blame the actual individuals. You know, there's a lot of talk about individual responsibility, and yet they don't actually have a solution that works. So, you know, and
those messages that everyone's getting fat are sometimes hitting the wrong mark. Lots of young girls smoking to stop, you know, putting on weight, or they think it's going to control their weight somehow. And, of course, you work with people with major body problems, image problems.
That's right. So I work with people who've got eating disorders and who engage in unhealthy weight loss behaviours. We do know that the Eating Disorders Foundation of Victoria reports that currently 8% of girls smoke. Teenage girls smoke to keep their weight down, and the Butterfly Foundation recently reported that bulimia and other unhealthy weight loss behaviours are becoming normative in schools. I think these hysterical messages about obesity are actually doing everyone harm, including those who are actually considered to be fat, because when people feel ashamed, you know, they're much more likely to engage in risky diet behaviours. And less likely to want to actually participate in exercise. I mean, I've had a patient who was considered overweight, went for a jog and had someone throw a can of soft drink at their head.
Oh, no.
There's a lot of abuse that goes on. And, you know, this is the other side of it, that I think obesity experts, they don't recognize enough the damage that comes from their messages that you know, for example, just a few years ago, there was an article on the front page of the newspaper saying Australia is officially the fattest nation on earth. And it was ridiculous the way that they'd calculated that. I mean, if you go solely by BMI, then entire rugby teams, which are obviously very fit men, would be included in that statistic. So this hysteria actually leads to, puts people at risk of unhealthy weight loss behaviors and at the extreme end, eating disorders. Now, there was a really interesting study done by Diane Newmark-Steiner in the States recently, and she actually looked at girls, teenage girls, and those who had the highest rates of body dissatisfaction were far more likely to be heavier than their peers 5 years down the line compared to those who actually liked the way that they looked and liked their bodies.
So how much is our mind part of the problem?
It's a huge part. You know, we're kind of, the body is designed to defend fat. This is the first time in human history that humans have actually tried to lose weight and undereat. And unfortunately, there seems to be a natural physiological response to that. You know, if you can imagine waking up and missing out on breakfast, having a really busy work day, missing out on lunch, coming home, what's the first thing you do? For a lot of people, it's going to be, they're going to raid the pantry and eat three times as much, three times as fast, and probably a lot of high-calorie, high-fat foods. And we see this kind of played out on a larger scale, that when people engage in weight loss attempts, often, you know, they're at higher risk of binge eating because it becomes this fixation on food and suddenly, you know, break out of jail free time, you know. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that attempting to lose weight, attempting to be that 2% that seems to be successful at keeping the weight off after 2 to 5 years, doesn't come without negative consequences. A lot of people start to weight cycle and engage in binge eating or emotional eating, and that is, you know, these things independent of weight are more harmful to health. And I want to talk a bit about how much, you know, obesity research is actually conflicted. For example, much of obesity research doesn't actually account for, you know, history of weight cycling, history of taking diet pills, history of socioeconomic status or nutrient intake, life fitness, stress factors. So it's really interesting that recently there was actually a study in the Nutrition Journal Online, and what was found was they looked at over 200 studies and found that it's possible that overweight in and of itself is not what poses a major health risk, and that being overweight in some cases is protective against certain diseases like osteoporosis, and that perhaps it is actually behaviors independent of weight that put people at risk of diseases that are commonly associated with obesity. But unfortunately, you know, I think profit kind of takes over, and we don't hear about these things. I mean, another study in 2005 put out by the Journal of the American Medical Association found that the overweight category, you know, people existing with a BMI of 25 to 29 are actually outliving every other weight category in the state.
This is ABC New South Wales, and I'm talking to Lydia Jade Turner from Body Matters about a piece she's written for the ABC's Drum. It's called A Weight Off Your Mind. She's been talking about BMI and the 25 to 29 weight category and how this demographic is living the longest, according to a recent study. I asked her if 25 to 29 is considered overweight or obese.
That's considered overweight, but at the same time, you know, a lot of rugby players would be considered obese, a lot of sportsmen would be considered obese. BMI, the grading of categories for BMI, for body mass index, you know, where they determined what was underweight, what was overweight, what was obese, what was healthy weight, was actually put together by the International Obesity Task Force, which itself was funded by the pharmaceutical makers of Zenical. And it looks as though the research didn't even support the cutoff points for healthy weight. Back in 1998, the maximum upper healthy weight limit was actually a BMI of 27, and then overnight it was reduced to 25. So millions of people went to sleep one night and woke up the next morning with a diagnosis of overweightedness. I mean, how many millions of new customers does that give the industry?
So what's health at every size?
Well, health at every size is a grassroots movement, it actually prides itself in exposing conflicts of interest in obesity research. It's not really, it puts health before profit. I think this is part of the problem, that it actually teaches people to eat intuitively, which means that they're not going to be going out and buying hordes of weight loss products and so forth. So it's not a profit-making movement. But what it does do is it gets people to move away from a weight-based approach to health, which sounds quite revolutionary and crazy, because how can you not rely on weight these days? Everyone seems to think that there's so much need to emphasize weight. Actually, you know, this movement gets people to throw out their scales and actually focus on health-giving activities, so engaging in exercise, eating intuitively, in tune with your body, and letting your weight fall where it will. Because the reality is, if you eat well and you exercise, you might still not be thin. Even if you're someone who's obese or overweight, it doesn't necessarily bring about thinness or even bring you into a healthy weight category, according to BMI. But we do know that a lot of the independent studies are showing that just by engaging in health-giving behaviors, you know, there are other numbers we can rely on, like blood pressure and blood sugar levels. I've certainly seen improvements, you know, in some of the patients I've done work with, despite the fact that they haven't actually lost weight. So do the
exercises you enjoy rather than the sweating out ones because you think it's going to do the most for burning off kilojoules.
Exactly. I think Kathy Freeman was leading an initiative where they were getting school kids to use pedometers, and I think that's a terrible idea. I mean, I'll agree that school kids and everyone in Australia probably would benefit from engaging in health-giving behaviours and finding sports that they enjoy and exercising. But, you know, using pedometers or, you know, using that Stairmaster to Nowhere, people often start to get obsessive about counting every step and seeing exercise as punishment rather than something enjoyable. And that really kind of tips over into the anorexic mindset. So what we encourage people to do is to actually find a sport or find some kind of physical movement that they enjoy and that is sustainable for their bodies. And also to eat intuitively. So,
how does that work? You let your body tell you what you want, and I hope it doesn't ask for a chocolate biscuit.
Well, with intuitive eating, there are no forbidden foods. But what we do encourage is, and it takes skill. It's not something that people can just sort of decide to do and find that it comes. You know, a lot of times, if people are used to eating fast food, you know, they may actually have already shaped their taste buds to prefer high-sugar, high-fat foods, and they may not actually be able to detect hunger as well because these foods are designed to glide down the throat so that you'll eat more of them before you can detect satiety. So, you know, for people who are used to eating high-fat, high-calorie foods all the time and highly processed foods, the good news is that your taste buds actually regenerate every 3 weeks. So you can actually retrain your taste buds to prefer healthier alternatives. Now, intuitive eating teaches us to listen to our bodies. Your body is communicating with you constantly. You know, when you're constipated, it's saying something to you. Maybe you don't have enough fiber in your diet. If you know, a lot of times people have forgotten how to recognize hunger and satiety because dieting actually teaches us to disconnect from our internal cues. It teaches us to ignore feelings of hunger and feelings of satiety, when in fact, you know, people, unless they have a medical disorder, we're built with an ability to regulate our appetites. So it's about learning to get back in tune with your body. And the reality is, if you're eating, you know, highly processed foods all the time, chances are you're not going to feel very good about it. But, you know, people should be able to have, you know, the occasional piece of chocolate if that's what they feel like having, because, you know, I think most of us have had the experience where we're trying not to eat something that we have decided is a forbidden food. We end up eating, you know, a sandwich and three times as many other things before we finally give in and have that chocolate bar, you know. So we're talking about really eating in tune with your bodily needs, finding exercise or physical movement that is pleasurable, and also seeing health as an ongoing process. It doesn't stop when you reach a number on the scales. And I think this is what's significant about the movement, that, you know, every day you can feel good about yourself for engaging in health-giving activities rather than beating yourself up for not being that number on that scale yet.
That is Lydia Jane Turner, and she's from Body Matters. And you can read that piece in the ABC's online opinion piece called The Drum, and talking about health at any size, which is interesting, isn't it? I know that if you are someone like me who's a blood donor or donate plasma, they actually like you to be having a bit of weight. It means they can take a bit more from you. But they always give you the checks first to see if you're anemic. Can't donate then, and of course that your blood pressure is all right. Peter the Postie says he's watching the cold front come in at Old Bar on the Manning, and read the BMI conversation. He eats everything. It works for him. I don't know how much pressure he's putting on those tyres, though, on his motorbike. And I don't know if you heard our interview with Lydia Jane Turner just before the news headlines. Lovely SMS here from someone saying, thanks you so much for your interview with Lydia of Body Matters. It was great to hear a balanced and reasonable view from a weight health expert. As an overweight person, I'm faced with ridicule from others every day. The hype in the media is causing overweight people to become outcasts from society. There are so many reasons why people are overweight. I was slim until I was sexually abused as a preteen. From that moment on, I've struggled with weight. Overweight people need support, not ridicule. Thanks for the SMS.